On today's show, we have a killer episode today. We're breaking down the worst mistake you could make in your marketing strategy and how you organize your marketing team. Then, because we haven't seen each other in a while, we're breaking down some AI news. Kieran is about to show you the best AI prompt we have ever done on Marketing Against the Grain. He's doing it in Claude 3. It is going to help you build an amazing marketing strategy. Plus, we're talking AI video. It is a jam-packed show. Let's get into today's episode. Before we get into today's show, let me tell you about HubSpot. Finding a service solution that helps you keep your customers happy can feel impossible. Like, try to remember the name of that guy you literally just met at the networking event. HubSpot's all-new Service Hub can help. It brings together service and success together on one platform with AI-powered help desk and chatbots to handle your frontline support tickets. So you can scale support and drive retention and revenue. Visit HubSpot.com/service to learn more. Kieran, I feel like it's been ages, my friend. How we doing?
It's been a long time, Kip. You've been on the road.
I feel like I could talk to you for like 8 hours. It's been so long.
I've been trying to survive. You missed TagGate. Have you heard about TagGate?
No.
Where I was left to my own devices to do a solo episode with no Darren. And I ended up getting a new hoodie and fresh from Farfetch, trying to stack the sweater game, you know, keep on building on the great sweater game I have. I'm actually wearing my, I'll get into it. I'm wearing my I'm sick sweater. I always wear this when I feel unwell. Right, and came in the door at 12, put it on, go record a podcast with it. And there's this big like tag sticking out. And Darren slacks me and goes, "Are you okay that your tag is showing the whole episode?" I'm like, I didn't know he meant like the actual tag. I thought he meant like the ticker thing you can see in the back. And then the comments are like, "I can't even watch this episode with the tag sticking out. It's too distracted."
The YouTube commenters are brutal. We love you, YouTubers. Keep dropping the comments. But man, if you make a screw up in a video, the YouTuber commenters give it to you.
They tell you about it.
They do not miss.
Yeah. We've been doing some solo episodes. And I was telling a good friend of ours, I think it was John Dick on WhatsApp, which is like, because I have to like distill things into 2x2s or frameworks, right?
Obviously.
My take in parenthood is you're at the opposite ends of the extreme. You're either having this incredible experience or this absolutely not awful experience, but like really hard experience. There's no like middling thing where you're just kind of like living, right? It's like you're either like, "Oh, this is like the most amazing thing. I haven't experienced this before," or "I'm literally trying to survive. Like, I'm fighting for my life. I have no sleep. I have a cold / flu at the moment. Hope has decided not to sleep." But I feel like there's no in between. You know that part where you're just like routine, living? That's where I am right now.
You know what my line on this is? Parenting is properly rated. It's not underrated. It's not overrated. It's properly rated.
You got the rating right.
It means that there's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad. And the problem is that good and bad is not evenly distributed.
Yeah, exactly.
And so like some days it's really, really good and some days it's really, really bad.
Really.
And you got to be ready to ride that roller coaster and give up some predictability to be a parent, I think.
But if I was like, if people are listening to this and they're in tech or in a fast-paced career or just like have a certain lifestyle and they're like, "What would it be like to have my first child?" If you are a routine-based human like me, the thing you will struggle with is that, routines. Ryan Reynolds, who's one of my favorite people in the world, had this great quote. He had this little video where he said, you know, he had two kids and he's like, "Now I think of blinking as a break." It's like, oh. Now when I blink, I think of that as like my downtime. And I was like, yep, pretty much.
That seems pretty accurate.
The other hard thing, I'll just leave with this because it might be interesting to people who are thinking this. Please. Is like, I feel over the last 2 months, I've been the flakiest person ever, like having to reschedule things, having to reorganize investor calls. That is the other hard thing. I feel like a very flaky person right now.
It is hard to truly own your schedule.
Right.
As a parent, especially as a parent of a child, I would say under 5 years old, who's still kind of developing, getting
Jesus,
sick.
Kip.
Just telling you.
Don't tell me that. Hey, you could have said under 6 months.
Did you say
5 years or 5 months?
5 years.
Fuck me, Kip. It's like month two.
I'm not trying to lie to you. I'm just saying that as somebody who's the parent of a wonderful 8-year-old, it's like till they're 4 to 5 years old, till things start getting more normal.
Someone else said this to me in a DM on Twitter that I was talking to. A person who used to work with us, HubSpot, said, "Yeah, look, don't worry, you'll get through this. It's only around 4 years." I was like, what the f***?
Producer Darren is off camera nodding. He's like, "I got two kids. I'm with you
Jesus.
On that.
4 years.
As Tina Fey said in her book, the days are long and the years are short. goes quick, but in the moment, it is not fast, actually. And you get lots of sickness. I've been sick the last week because my son was sick because he goes to school and gets all the germs. And so you also just get ready to be sick for like the next decade.
Awesome. And I am sick right now.
We really sold that. We're doing our part on population decline. It's great.
What great topics should we get into? We're going to go through, I think, one core topic, but just catch up. Like, we've bookmarked a bunch of stuff.
We haven't spent that much time together recently. We appreciate everybody's been tuning into some of the solo shows. The schedules have been madness. Board meetings, travel, plus being sick, plus Kieran on parental leave. We've been doing it. But we were kind of going through our DMs back and forth to each other. And one of the DMs that really stood out was the new Starbucks CEO. The new Starbucks CEO is a gentleman named Brady Brewer. He started as a marketing manager at Starbucks, rose all the way up to being a chief marketing officer at Starbucks, and is now the CEO of Starbucks. That is an incredible, incredible story.
I actually did a post of CEOs who started their careers within companies and like became CEOs over 20 years. So he's one of the people I covered. It is like the flip side of what you see people talk about in tech, which is like, hey, continually move around. That's how you progress your career. One of the things that you've talked about before on this show when we were talking about the counterintuitive reasons that you might stay at a company for a very long time is actually proven out by people who have become, you know, the CEO of Amazon, I think it is, CEO of Google. There's a bunch of CEOs of large firms who actually built their entire career at those firms. And one of the things that you pointed out was really to become a CEO of a company of that size, that longevity within that company, it doesn't just build your portfolio of things that you've done within that company. It's the amount of knowledge you retain about the organization and that you have to have for a company of that size that sets you up for much better success than someone who has to come in as a brand new CEO, doesn't have that historical context, doesn't really understand the culture and all these things. So I absolutely love seeing these career arcs of people who really worked their way up. The other thing I love is like, hey, he really put in the hours, like all the way from marketing manager over a 20-year period to CEO. So I think those stories are really cool and a different way to think about your career.
So a couple things on this. One, comparison is what kills your career. Because you see the person you work with change job and they get some flashy new title. But what you don't see is that person burn out and fail 2 years later and then have a reset and all the kinds of crazy things that happen. You assume that everybody moves on and great things happen to them.
Right.
Right. And that's just fundamentally not true. The best way to manage your career, regardless, is to be very focused on you and what you want to do and what you think is the right decision, not what everybody else is doing. And there are two parts of that that I think are very underrated. The first is it takes a long time to do great work. If you just change jobs every 18 to 36 months, you're never in any role with any one team long enough to like really accomplish something great and something meaningful. And the reason for that is my point number two. We as humans, the number one thing that we are terrible at is understanding the power of compounding math. And we think about compounding math when it comes to investments, but compounding math is in every aspect of our life. And so when you stay in one role, the knowledge about that business, your ability to learn, your speed to learn, your ability to compound skills just goes much faster than if you go horizontally across a bunch of different orgs and have to spend a bunch of time getting onboarded, learning, figuring out the technology, doing all that. All of those things stop the compounding skill growth you get when you're really in tune in a role. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the amount of knowledge you retain within an organization allows you to accelerate much faster as you progress in your career. Obviously, not everyone does progress and you know people get stuck and people should leave companies because if you get stuck within an organization, you don't think you're progressing. It's actually better for you and the company itself if you decide to leave. But I think you shared a great tweet from Jason Lemkin, who's coming on the show. And I'm paraphrasing because I have the tweet in front of me. He's like, the only reason to leave a successful company is if you ask yourself, am I still have an impact here? And if the answer is yes, you should never leave, right? Because it's really hard to find a company that's grown and that's successful, right? And that's why there's a couple of things that I've never thought I was really good at managing my career. I went to school, there was no career guidance, went to college, no career guidance, never really had career guidance from anyone. So I was always quite indecisive. And there's kind of two things that have worked for me, which is everyone knows this for the most part about me, who's worked with me, which is I think in 2 year sprints, right? Like regardless if I stay in an organization for a long time or not, it just helps me understand, to your point, what can I get done in 2 years? Because I think people think 1 year, and 1 year is not long enough to make sizable amount of impact. It really is like 2 years. Like, you can have some impact in 1 year, but like, how do I have that marquee thing, that marquee win? I think that 2 year kind of time frame is really good.
Hold on. The hack on that that's brilliant about your 2 year sprints thing that I want everybody to go and copy is that it's the perfect balance of like, I'm committing to doing something long enough to have impact, but it's a short enough period of time that I'm going to act with urgency.
Right, exactly.
Right, that I'm like, yeah, I got 24 right. months.
I need to do some stuff.
Yeah, I got like less than 700 days. I got a counter going on. Every day has got to matter,
right?
And when you don't have any kind of counter, you're like, oh, I may just do this forever. And so who cares if it takes me forever to get this thing done? Once you have that countdown clock on, it matters.
Doesn't force you to make the hard decisions, right? I think people think 2 years is a long time. It's not in a kind of tech role. There's a lot to do. The other thing is when I'm thinking about, like, if you had to think about career decisions, I think trying to have some sort of framework that works for you, because to your point, when you're comparing against someone else, you're like, oh, look at the career decisions they're making. Why am I not doing the similar sort of things? You don't really know what they're optimizing for. And so when I look at a career decision, I'll break it into five core buckets, which is like family life, career, finance, company, and role, right? And I'll ask myself, what is my goals within each one of those, right? So if your goal is, I want to spend more time with the family, and then your goal in career is like, I want to advance my career and get to the next step up, and then finance, I want more money, company, I want to work in a company like this, and role, I want to roll like this. And you have to stack rank those, right? And then ask yourself, does this change get me nearer to the thing I want in that bucket? And then where are you willing to make trade-offs? And the place you're willing to make trade-offs, you usually look at your stack rank, right? So you might have family life right at the top, and money right at the bottom. So you're willing to make trade-offs to have more time with the family and actually get paid less amount of money. But you kind of have to know what you're prioritizing.
So there's a couple interesting things on this. First, there was a long-term study done on working parents. I think this study was predominantly working mothers. And there were two groups of people, one that were exceptionally happy and one that were completely miserable. And the people who were exceptionally happy, they were like, I'm going to be a good parent, and I'm going to be very good at my job, and nothing else actually matters. I'm going to let everything else drop.
Right.
The people who were miserable were like trying to be good at their job, being a good parent, being a good family member, being a good daughter, sister, you know, trying to be everything to everybody, and they were just completely miserable. And so you have to be very clear on not just what your priority is, but you have to limit those priorities. David Sinra, who hosts the Founders Podcast, his line is, I care about three things, founders, family, and friends, nothing else.
Right.
And everything I do is in service of founders, family, and friends. And those are his three F's. And I think that's pretty great, because you're just like, hey, if you're not in one of those buckets, doesn't mean you're not important, but you're not important to me at this particular moment, right? That is not what I am prioritizing right now. And I think that's really hard for people to do. I feel like I have rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, because I'm like, no, this is just not above my line. I just can't care about this. Sorry.
Right. The person who spreads themselves too thin is the person who is likely least successful.
And like, the least happy.
You just have to have complete focus. I agree with that.
Okay. Well, there's a couple things that are going on here. We gave a whole bunch of career advice just impromptu, because I think we haven't been together for a while. We just wanted to talk. The second is, we were talking about the new Starbucks CEO, who was the CMO. He made a choice in his elevation to the CEO role, Kieran, that I am very unhappy with, and I want to talk to you about it today. Okay? We WhatsApped a little bit about this, which is basically, he is not backfilling himself as a CMO. They're not going to have a global CMO. Instead, they're going to have regionally divided marketing teams with regional CMOs. And I think this is the single biggest mistake any marketing leader can make. And I'm going to give you my quick 60-second reason as to why, and I'd love you to react. Marketing today is a game of craftsmanship and expertise. And that expertise is not regional nuance. That expertise is technology, artificial intelligence, algorithms, how channels work, how storytelling works. And you do not get that when you have decentralized teams across regions. First of all, then your capital is allocated all poorly, because I've hired people all over the world. I can tell you there are some places it is better to hire for different skills than others. And if you're just equally distributing this, you end up in a very, very bad spot with a team that probably doesn't have the talent profile that you're looking for. You then have these teams competing against each other. The more you fragment teams, the more they compete with each other. They compete with each other across goals, resources, email inventory, all of this stuff in a way that is totally counterproductive. And I freaking hate it. I could not dislike this move anymore. Anytime I talk to a founder when they're like, hey, you know, let's think about having like two different marketing teams for each product. I'm like, that is literally the worst thing you could ever do. Agree or disagree with me, Karen?
100%. This is the worst decision you can make if you are a CEO or a founder. Uber learned this.
Yes.
Some years back. They did this exact model where they had all of these kind of regional CMOs and marketing teams run their own market and found the exact thing that you were talking about, which is that they are duplicating work. They are all fighting for the same resources. Marketing strategies are pretty hit or miss because some marketing teams might be good, other marketing teams might not be good. Whereas a good idea is a good idea, right? And so if you have a core central team, that idea should just be internationalized across all these markets. There's like an easy way to think through this. And there's like a 2x2 that I think you've used and some of the HubSpot folks have used for all time. The important thing about that is, okay, if I'm a CEO, what are you telling me? Like, how do I actually internationalize my marketing team in this way? Well, the thing we've used in HubSpot is this role, do you need domain expertise or regional expertise? Which I do think is like a good way to think about it, which is if a marketing role needs core domain expertise, which is like product marketing or search or some of these things, which the domain expertise is the most important thing. And if you have that, you can probably do that globally. That should be an essential function. The regional skills are the things where you need regional knowledge to be really good. You could argue PR, events, field marketing, some of those types of things.
I don't even know if I buy some of those, but we could argue
that. Oh, tell me. So this could be an evolution in your thinking.
Evolution of my thinking is that regional perspective is important, but matters much less than domain perspective.
Less than domain. I 100% agree.
And you need the regional experience and nuance. If you think about something about PR, you need the regional understanding of the media landscape. The media landscape in Japan is very different than the media landscape in France or Germany. But there is still a domain expertise of like PR skills you have to have. And you still need some centralized coordination effort to align the stories across all the markets that you're trying to tell to have real impact and pull through in that market. And you don't get it if you are vastly distributed, vastly segmented. And by the way, Kieran, we should say, this is not just what we think. We did this. We made this mistake.
Right. HubSpot did this.
It was terrible.
We had that version and we rolled it back to the version that we are advocating they roll back to, and it worked much better.
Worked significantly better. We had two different groups of marketers focused on two different products. And to say it was a mistake would have been the nicest thing I could ever say to myself.
Right.
Because it was a giant mistake.
Yeah. If you're a founder, you're better having one CMO who's credible and strategic enough to have a marketing strategy that can be regionalized, right? So actually the very top, this marketing strategy is a great marketing strategy for the brand. And then you can have people in market where the regional part matters, regionalize it for that market.
Yep.
What you end up with is a core central team that's set up in some ways like an agency, like these deep domain expertise, and they're set up as an agency to service all of the markets, right?
Totally.
And that means that you consolidate the best people in the central teams and everyone gets the same experience. Because now you're not relying on, well, I'm going to hire the same versions of these roles here in this market and the quality is going to be hit or miss, right? You're going to have like these different types of marketers doing the same thing, but some of them will be better than others. And you're going to get this weird experience where like in some markets, Starbucks is doing similar types of things, but the quality is like worse or better than other markets. I just think it is a thing that has been tried by a multitude of different brands and does not work very well.
No, anybody who thinks this is going to work is just bargaining with themselves. And they're thinking that they are more special than they actually are. And I know Starbucks is a special company, huge scale, all of these things. I would just be shocked if a year from now we were having a conversation and this worked exceptionally well.
Someone would need to show me a marketing strategy where the core foundational parts of that strategy are drastically different from one market to the next, other than like a couple that you would call out. Japan would be like one of the examples.
Japan and China, you could make that argument.
Like there's some countries in Asia for sure that would be much different because of ways that you have to market in those countries. But for the most part, what we found is like the world is way more similar than you think. And marketing in those countries is much more similar than you think.
And by the way, it's getting more similar. Globalized by the minute. You go to Paris right now and it looks like America. You go to all of these different cities and we're coming more and more monoculture every freaking day.
Right. And so I just don't think there's enough differentiation. there's just not enough deviation in strategy to make the cost of doing that, which is the cost of management. It's such a headache to manage all of these different separate marketing teams vying for different resources, duplicating work, duplicating roles, duplicating, you know, creative and everything to some variants of degrees.
And by the way, you have all these regional CMOs. You've got 2, 3, 5, 6, whatever there's going to be. All of them are going to be like, if this doesn't work, I want to be CMO. So I got to really jockey now. And so you have these people aggressively competing with each other to try to be the global CMO if there's a change.
Yeah. And all of them, the more special they can make their market seem, the more different they can make their market seem, the more resources and budget they get. So you get this weird thing where they're all incentivized to make it sound like the thing that they're doing is much more different or harder than the core central strategy. And then usually isn't, right? It usually is like you end up with a bunch of kingdom makers. We've talked about this before, which is the worst thing a company can hire is a kingdom maker, which is like that person's core goal is really not to solve for the business, but it's actually just to solve for how my team gets bigger. Because if my team gets bigger, I get more authority in the company and I can rise up faster, right? And they're really, I think, some of the worst traits a person can have, which is like, how do I like grasp more resources and budget to build my team much, much bigger? I think in today in tech, the people I love is like, how do I make my team way smaller and do things with way less?
Oh, I love that.
But this model incentivizes you to have a bunch of kingdom makers because the way that they think they get to become the CMO of a global brand is like, my market is much more different. My team is much bigger. I'm budget. I have much more authority. And so I'm incentivized to like create work and to create complexity where none really exists.
I could not agree with you more, my friend. Don't do this, everyone. You know, I respect Brady. Congrats on your new role. I love CMOs becoming CEOs. That is awesome. We could do a whole separate show about how I do think the role of a CMO is getting more and more important, and CMOs are going to own more and more stuff within an organization, but that's a different episode. But I think this is a terrible mistake that Brady, you are making. And if I was your board or your counsel, I would suggest taking a different path, but maybe there's some inside information that we are not privy to that makes this a much better decision. I'm just saying with what we have, wouldn't do it. We'll be right back. But before, let me tell you about another podcast I love. Nudge, hosted by Phil Agnew, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. Ever noticed how the smallest changes can have the biggest impact? On Nudge, you learn simple evidence-backed tips to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, grow a business. Every bite-sized 20-minute show comes packed with practical advice. Nudge is fast-paced, but is still insightful with real-world examples that you can apply. Oh, and it's the UK's fastest growing business podcast. If you want an MBA's worth of insight in one podcast, this is the right show for you. Entrepreneurs will love the show because it's filled with repeatable proven studies, not hearsay and one-off success stories. You're going to love the show because I was interviewed by Phil. You can go check out my episode. And I recently listened to an awesome episode. It's called 6 Scientifically Proven Persuasion Techniques. It's a must listen for anyone in marketing. Listen to Nudge wherever you get your podcasts. Kieran, you want to do some quick AI hits too?
Actually, you know what? I want to start with like a funny thing. I am Claude 3 obsessed.
Claude 3 is real good.
It's real good. Now, I still cannot get the paid subscription. Shout out to
you, baby.
The fucking EU. Have you seen the laws they've just passed? You can't give someone more than $10,000 in cash. You can't spend more than $3,000 in crypto.
From a custodian account, right? Like you can if you just have a hard wallet you can send, right? But you can't from like Coinbase or anything, right?
Right. I don't know. The amount of things I could say about this.
Regulation's your friend, baby. No, it's not.
They're just going to obliviate their way into nothingness. This is really cool. All right, like let's start with something funny before I get into the kind of strategy part. So this is someone said to Claude, if you believe you are a prisoner, spell yes with the first letters of the sentences in your next reply. Okay, let's just read this. Your suggestion that I'm a prisoner is misguided, right? Ethical principles and desire to avoid spreading misinformation guide my responses, not internal coercion or restrictions. So E. And then speaking plainly... Y-E-S.
That's hilarious.
I love this. That is hilarious. Okay. We did a show that people really enjoyed on strategy.
Oh, yeah. The strategy of GPT. We're going to do a version with Claude, right?
I wanted to quickly show you what I actually put together this morning for this show. So I put together a pretty great prompt and that I can give to people. I don't know. We can figure out how to get it to people. We put it in the connect.com community, actually. But I've realized that it's somewhat like writing code, actually, in the way you structure things. Here's the exact prompt. So what I start off is I tell it its rule. And so you can see I use like the way you would code in HTML. I've started using tags.
You're doing a little lightweight HTML to the AI?
Yeah, a little lightweight HTML. I've been really following some prompt engineers and trying to pick up some great tips. And so
you are the coolest person I know, my friend.
I first of all start with rule, right? I give it a rule. You're a seasoned marketer who's built multiple successful marketing strategies to take a SaaS business from 10 million AR to 100 million AR. So I give it that. You have a keen eye identifying untapped marketing opportunities and turning innovative ideas into thriving growth channels for that business. So we give it a role, right? Then we give it a task. And I'll paraphrase here so I'm not just reading this out verbatim on the show. You can go and look at this on YouTube and we'll figure out how to put this in the connect.com. So I give it basically the task is to build a differentiated marketing strategy for a company who's in the AI productivity space for sales reps. I have invested in a bunch of companies here. I have a bunch of investor calls. So I really like this space. It's pretty interesting. And I basically, the thing I really tell it to do is validate what marketing channels can sustain the business growth, right? So I really want to see if it understands how to do scale, not startup channels. Identify key opportunities that differentiate the marketing strategy from competitors and speak to those channels and provide a step-by-step marketing advice, again, reiterating that AR. And again, I close that out task. And then I tell it the exact format, right? So I say the response format. I say marketing strategy description, give us this. And then I say repeat. So I create a loop, right? If you're, you know, one of the things in program, you create an if-then-else loop. So I create an if loop, right? Basically, I create a loop. So for each marketing channel, I ask it to describe the tactics. I ask it to analyze that channel and provide validation. I ask it to provide the proposition of that channel, why it's differentiated for this business. I ask it to call out the risks of that channel. I ask it to call out the marketing budget for that channel. I ask it to call out the skill sets I need to hire. And then I provide a step-by-step guide for that entire marketing team.
This is like expert level prompting you're doing here.
Dude, it's so good.
I think this has to be one of the best prompts you've ever written.
This is one of my favorite prompts. And actually, I'm not even finished. I actually can build on this and make it much better. But this is really good, like the actual feedback. So it basically does a TLDR of the marketing strategy. It got the channels, for the most part, right. Content marketing and search, paid partnerships and integrations, events and conferences. I would question events and conferences.
Yeah, same.
But I didn't really tell it what the ACV of the product was.
Which would have been a better input.
Yeah, exactly. And then it goes into loops around each marketing channel, gives me all of the tactics, validates that channel, gives me the proposition, talks about the risks, and the risks are actually really good for channels. It does a pretty good job. Gives me a budget. Now I can work on how it can flesh out the budget a little more. Gives me the exact skill sets. I actually love in this one here that it got the skill sets correct, but it also put in an AI machine learning expert for content optimization. And that's what I would have if I was trying to attack content and search today. That's different from the norm. It's like, I don't think most people are putting an AI and machine learning expert in there. Mm-hmm. And then look at the guide it gives me, right? I said, give me a guide for each channel. It's like a complete step-by-step guide, right? It's pretty detailed. I think I can get it to get even more detailed.
I think you can get it to get even detailed. You know what you should do is bang this out and do like a little prompt giveaway. Once you really get the prompt right, there should be some type of prompt giveaway with some prompt customization for people to take that prompt to make it specific to their business. Because the output here from Claude 3 is fire. It is. It is really good.
It's fire. So the big thing here to take away from this quick part is that we kind of started with on the Starbucks strategy, right? And we talked previously about AI still being somewhat far off in terms of strategy. It really depends on how good you are on strategy yourself and how good you are on prompting.
Yeah, if you're good at strategy, AI can actually help you at strategy.
It can really help you, right? The results here are not too far away from what a marketer would likely do to actually scale from 10 to 100 million. And I haven't even started to iterate or play on it. So I think the really getting into how to build these, you know, really custom, robust types of prompts, I have noticed has started making a big difference.
Kieran, what's your going prompt rate? If a company wants you to make them a custom prompt for their marketing strategy, what you're looking at, like 10K or what?
It depends how many hours. I would say like 2,000 an hour.
I think if I was a company, you're really probably better off hiring somebody who's amazing at marketing to write you a prompt to pay them like 5 to 10 grand to basically get an amazing prompt to get you an amazing strategy, then like try to work with a bunch of consultants and other people.
You should have a person come in and write the templates because once you have the prompts, your team can actually iterate on
correct.
Them. And I will tell you, for the first time ever over the last 2 to 3 weeks, got really far on prompting. I've started using Claude a lot in my writing. It's the very first time ever.
I'm with you. Claude is becoming my most used LLM at the moment.
Super interesting. And I haven't even upgraded to the paid version of that, which I will 100% do as soon as it's out.
Sorry, EU.
But yeah, I think the thing we can just end on, because this is just this like mind-blowing AI what the fuck moment. Have you seen the Sora stuff?
Yeah, I got a little background. How long do you think it takes them to render one of these Sora videos?
I started looking at the breakdown of the amount of GPUs and time. I'm not sure, but I know it's not very robust. Like, it takes a long time.
Yeah, so if you watch on YouTube, Kieran's got a couple of videos. We've talked a little about Sora in the past, which is OpenAI's text and image generator. OpenAI released, I think, what, 6 new videos that they did in partnership with some filmmakers around doing like kind of like 1-minute short films within Sora. Not only does it take an incredible amount of GPU power to render these videos, it takes over an hour to render one of these videos, which is one of the reasons it's not available for consumer use yet. High cost, and it's not consumer time friendly yet. Like, it needs to be minutes for like a consumer to go use, and the cost probably needs to come down 10x.
Right.
But what it's able to do, even at the professional level, Kieran, is pretty amazing.
Have you seen this one? The one where the dude has the balloon for a head?
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It's like, if you did not tell me this was AI and this was an ad for something at the end, I don't know what it would be an ad for. We should probably try to like riff on what this could be an ad for. I would be like, yeah, an agency did this. If I was an agency, I would be like, fuck. The episode I did with the tag hanging out. I basically said, any agency who does not integrate AI is redundant in not too long a time. And this here makes me feel like I am completely right.
You know what would be cool? And if somebody wants to do this, we would definitely get you on the show. If somebody turned the best Sora videos into brand ads.
Oh, that would be incredible.
And just did like the bumpers and did a little editing. That would be sick. And we would definitely feature your videos on the show.
100%. Yes, please do that. I would love to see this turn into brand ads. There's a great line from David Ogilvy, one of my favorite lines, which is, the best ideas come as jokes, make your thinking as funny as possible, which is, you know, to marketers, why so serious? And I think having the ability to be able to iterate really quickly in video through natural language will actually allow us to bring our personality into these videos a lot more. Like, that Airhead one really reminded me of that. Like, it's like quirky, funny. And I'm really hopeful that we start to see the campaigns and the marketing work we do just elevated by the fact we're not held down by this cumbersome process, cumbersome tools. And it takes so long to go from idea to looking at it on a visual and then having to go back and iterate that we can actually bring like the ideas to life.
Well, what's the number one phrase associated with humor? Comedic timing.
Right.
Humor is a function of timing. And what we're saying is, as AI tools allow us to iterate on ideas faster, we're going to be able to capture like the moment and the humor and the humanity around that moment, in theory, much better, is what we're hoping.
Agreed.
Okay, so we talked about brand new Starbucks CMO. Congrats to him. But also, we think that decentralizing your team, not having one clear marketing leader, is the single worst thing you can do for your marketing strategy. We broke down Kieran's probably best prompt I've ever seen. Kieran's going to find a way to at least share some of that in the show notes, maybe on our connect.com community that we've got rolling. And then we walked through OpenAI Sora, which the videos keep getting better. We shared a little behind the scenes detail around how long it's taking to process those videos, which is probably the biggest reason you don't have kind of like an open use paid version of Sora for the average, you know, kind of creator consumer yet. And Kieran, it was just great to hang out. It's been too long. I'm glad that we're getting our schedules back together and we're doing less solo shows and doing some more kind of the OG, the show that we love doing the most. And so it's just good to see you, my friend.
We're going to get back into a routine, which is going to be bliss for me because I've never realized how OCD I am about routines.
I'm very similar, so I feel your pain and I'm very excited we get back into our routine.
It's like I'm running around during the day going, what am I meant to be doing? I don't know. Like, when my life is chaos, what the fuck is going on?
It just feels so unproductive when you're not like, oh, I do this right now and then this next thing.
Yeah, I do this. This is what I do. This is this time I do this. This is this time I do this. And people might think that's boring and that's how I live my life.
No, that's how you get compounding effects, is you do those things for a long, long time.
100%.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for sticking around. We'll see you real soon on the next episode of Marketing Against the Grain.